Good evening, everyone, and welcome. This is Mount Prospect School District 57 Board of Education meeting for August 24th. It's 7:05. Virginia, would you please take the roll?
Member Chung?
Here.
Member Contrasto?
Here.
Vice President Kovas?
Here.
Member Kowalczyk?
Here.
Member May? Member McCluskey?
Here.
President Klonenfeld?
Here. Okay. So the first item on our agenda is NSSCO report. Dennis?
Was unable to attend the meeting this month.
All right. Do we have an Ed Foundation report?
We do. So they met a few weeks ago on August 3rd.
Take the mic.
Sorry. So the Ed Foundation, their last meeting was on August 3rd at Draft Picks. As everyone has probably heard by now, their fall event has been finalized. It'll be on Friday, October 6th from 6:30 to 9:30 at Draft Picks. They're having the back room and the patio open, and the event ticket will be $30, and you'll get all you can eat, pizza and sliders and two drink tickets, and the band Seventh Heaven is going to perform. So very exciting. So the event tickets can be purchased online right now, and then they have raffle tickets for sale as well. They're also gearing up for a big social media campaign, and if you've been to any of the back to school nights, you would have seen this amazing video that they put together to showcase the foundation and some of the work that they've done. And then also one other thing I want to share, Joe and Dr. Allmiller already know this, but so I have volunteered this year to be the Ed Foundation secretary. It's an administrative position, so it's mostly note-taking and keeping the meeting minutes, but to avoid any potential conflicts of interest as a school board member, I'm gonna be a non-voting secretary. So anything that they put to a vote, I just will not vote, I'll abstain. And then I also let everyone know that me being the school board liaison and the Ed Foundation secretary is a unique situation, that it's not setting some precedent or expectation for future board liaisons to take on that role too. I don't know if anyone had any questions about that or concerns.
Anyone?
And then the last thing is their next meeting is Tuesday, September 5th, 7 o'clock at Westbrook.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any PTO reports at this early date? Anyone? No. Okay.
Well, I was not able to make the last Westbrook PTO meeting, but Vicki attended.
Yeah.
And she was so kind to provide me a summary. I don't have it.
Did they meet when?
It was a meet and greet at the library.
Okay.
And maybe Vicki could share some.
So last Monday, the Westbrook PTO had a back to school meet and greet at the Mount Prospect Library. There's about 20 people there, so it was a very full meeting, as well as Dr. Gore and Mrs. Vonderhaar. All of the PTO officers were there, as well as the chairs. And so basically it was a chance for the officers and the chairs to get to know one another. Many of them are co-chairs who haven't met, so they got a chance to interact. And then one great thing is that I think with the possible exception of one committee chair, I mean, every position has been filled. So they're really in great shape and to launch the year.
Great, that's great. All right, thank you.
Thanks, Vicki.
So the board president's report. First, I just wanted to review the October dates we were kind of chatting about before the meeting. There's a number of things coming up. The first and most important is our board self-evaluation on October 5th, and we'll start that meeting at 6 p.m. at the administration building. If you want to show up at 5:45, there will be some light dinner provided. The following day, Friday, October 6th, in addition to the Ed Foundation event, there is a luncheon for EdRed. That's a kickoff luncheon at Cafe Le Cave, 20 in Des Plaines. So let Virginia know if you plan on attending. Also, the way I received it was like an evite. Did you guys get an evite in your board email?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I replied on the evite, but I don't know if we should probably still let you know that we're gonna go.
It's a luncheon there, do they charge you then?
I don't No. I think they were just looking for a head count.
Just a head count.
Yeah, but.
Oh, okay, so I guess if you, I don't respond for you then again if you've already responded.
I would assume that. I just was a little confused about that, yeah. All right. I don't have a time here. Oh, it's at noon, the luncheon at, on October 6th. October 18th is the IASB Fall Division Dinner Meeting at the same location, Café Le Cab. That is a 6:15 dinner meeting. So again, be sure to let Virginia know if you can attend that. And October 24th at 8:30 a.m. is Hodges Louise Annual Year in Review Law Conference. Again, let Virginia know if you'd like to register for that. Okay. I did attend the first task force meeting last week. And the first meeting was mainly, first of all, it was really well attended. I think we had about 30 task force members that replied and agreed to be a part of it. And the first meeting was mostly kind of bringing them up to speed on the budget situation in the district, enrollment, a little bit of history, and how the task force is going to move forward. So they're going to be formulating questions to include on a survey of district stakeholders. So at the next meeting should be pretty interesting, because I think there will be a lot of discussion about, you know, what type of questions they want to put to the public, what kind of information they want to get to the public as we move forward. But I thought it was a good group, and I ran into some people the following evening who had a lot to say after they had kind of had a day to process what they heard at the task force meeting. You know, they approached me and had a lot of ideas and just kind of a lot of feedback and things that they were thinking about. So I think the next meeting is going to be pretty interesting. I think there should be some good discussion. That's all I have. So we'll move on.
Oh, September
17th. Oh, yeah. We have a tentative meeting scheduled for September 7th, and there's nothing to include on that agenda. So if there's a consensus, we'll cancel that meeting. Is anyone opposed? All right.
We'll use it for a policy committee meeting.
Yeah, we can schedule a policy committee meeting that evening.
What time is that meeting at? Policy?
Five.
Okay.
All right. Then at this point in the meeting, it's our first opportunity for community comments. I just want to remind everyone that not a question and answer period. If you have questions, you can certainly submit them to us at any time, but right now, if you have comments or ideas you'd like to share, please step forward.
Excuse me, thank you. Was that October 6th for the luncheon?
That is
the Plains
Ed Red Luncheon. That is an organization for school board members and administrators.
Oh.
Yeah.
We loudmouth citizens are not allowed to go.
I think that's a closed organization, yeah. What they do is they educate us on issues in Springfield and how they're affecting our school districts.
Well, maybe we could help the education department out. Who knows? The second one is, you mentioned the September 7th meeting. Is that a closed meeting or is that public?
It is closed session.
That's a closed session meeting.
Closed session? Okay. All right. That's all I've got for the moment.
Thank you, sir.
Good evening, everyone. This is my second chance this year, I think, to raise my complaints or concerns or whatever. First of all, I want to thank you for giving us a chance to address this board. Also, I want to commend and thank all of you for your selfless efforts on behalf of the school children of this district. Unfortunately, this is where the pleasantries must end. On August 1st, I, like most of you, paid or have earlier paid our Cook County property tax. Due to the triannual equalized assessment value of my home, my tax bill increased by $1,771. That's in 1 year. District 57's portion of my bill increased by $572, an increase of nearly 30% from 2015. This increase is $432 more than the average increase of $140 per year for the last 10 years. Now, figure out the extra total dollars taken in by the district this year. If, for example, the average is $400 more per residence, multiplied by 10,000 residents, you took in about $4 million more, more this year. You have just engaged a company that costs $65,000 to advise you on how and when to put a referendum in front of the taxpayers of this district. If you have that much money to waste, why not donate it to the Mount Prospect Food Pantry or other deserving charities? After the property tax increase I mentioned earlier, all I can say is enough is enough. Any referendum will be intensely fought by us, the residential taxpayers, and other concerned citizens. We will go door to door to encourage voters to vote no. Some of us will even volunteer to drive those unable to drive to the polls. Since 1988, according to the Illinois Association of School Administrators, 22 school referendums passed, while 40 were defeated. Chances are good that your referendum, if put on a ballot, will also be defeated, especially after this latest Cook County property tax increase. Thank you.
And for our audience, would you just state your name, please, sir? Could you let us know who you are for the recording?
I'm sorry?
Your name, please.
I almost forgot. Jerry Bolt, 300 North School Street, Mount Prospect.
Thank you,
District
Mr. Bolt.
District 57 resident for over 40 years.
Thank you. All right, we'll continue. Is there anyone else? All right. So our first staff report is a report on the tentative budget. Mr. Parisi.
Thank you. At this time, I'm just going to spend a few minutes going over the highlights of the tentative budget, and then we'll have some time for questions. So, and this is very closely mirrors the memo and the information and exhibits that are in your packet. So, it's typical at this time for the board to see the tentative FY18 agenda. This is based on data up until about a week ago. So as far as salaries and benefits and levy numbers and funding numbers, that is all based on actual values at that time. There will always be changes that are made in between August and September. And so any individuals that are hired in between that time, then those actual values would be updated. So at this time, and give me just a second to tweak this. This is exactly what you're seeing in your packet, but it may be an easier reference point. The aggregate fund balance is estimated to decrease by a little over $1 million. The operating budget, taking into consideration education, O&M, and transportation, is calling for a deficit spending plan of $314,791. The state budget form takes into account any transfers that take place between the working cash fund and the fund of greatest need. This was approved at the June board meeting, where we've taken some interest income from the working cash fund and transferred into IMRF Social Security in the amount of approximately $15,000. The timeline for this process: earlier in June, the assumptions were shared with the Board of Education based on the best known factors at that point. I'm sitting here tonight giving you the tentative budget with the best available data that I have, again, at this juncture. After this evening, the board will be, or the entire budget will be placed on public display, where individuals will be able to view it over the 30-day period. We'll come back here on Thursday, September 28th, and vote to discuss and then adopt the official budget. Also in your packet, in addition to the state form, you have three exhibits, B, C, and D. The first one is all of the revenues, which is broken down by the individual funds and functions. Exhibit C are expenditures, broken down by function, and Exhibit D are expenditures that are broken down by object. Just a short summary of things. Local sources, a majority of our local sources are funded by property tax dollars. The district is budgeting a little more than $19.5 million for property tax collection for fiscal year 18. This represents a collection rate of 98.3%. CPI that will correspond to the levy that takes place in the in December of 2018 is 2.1%. You know the way the Cook County estimates its taxes. We get a portion in one fiscal year and the second portion in the second fiscal year. So when we're looking at a tax levy year, it's split between two fiscal years, and it's split unevenly. 55% comes in March, and the remaining comes beginning prior to August. Looking at EA.
Did you mean to say the levy in December of this year or next year, the 2018?
Every levy year. The levy that is, the amount that is levied, 55% of the previous year is made available in March.
I know. And you said the 2.1.
The 2.1 CPI will be levied in December of 2017, and those dollars will be made available beginning in July of 2018. The new growth EAV, the total new growth in EAV, is estimated at $29.2 million. A large portion of that is as a result of the TIF expiring and those TIF dollars coming off. The other portion of that is a result of the triennial assessment or reassessment. The other side of the TIF being expiring or expired is that the annual payments of approximately, I believe the last time was close to the $700,000 annual payments are no longer paid to the district. So on the positive end, it rolled into new property where the district was able to access that through taxes. On the negative end, those one-time payments that have been made since the TIF was extended back in 2006 are no longer made available. So in this budget, that line item is no longer available. And then a possible reduction of close to $345,000 is assumed for any kind of tax refunds or objections that come from community taxpayers. I do have a very recent update. This just came yesterday in relation to the CPPRT. That's the Corporate Personal Property Replacement Tax. Possibly you've heard of we've heard with some issues with the state, but generally we've projected approximately $500,000 to come from CPPRT. The state is just issued a memo saying that they're looking at a decline of more than 23% across every school district, which for us, that $500,000 decreases to more about in the $370,000 range. So that's a further $130,000 reduction. That is not in this budget because this budget was produced prior to yesterday, and this is news that just came through yesterday. So just wanted to point that out as we're trying to wrap our head around the entire situation.
So what's the rationale for them just doing that across the state? Are they phasing out this tax?
Not necessarily at this time.
Are they still collecting the money but not distributing it to the districts? I don't understand.
The rationale that is stated here is that the replacement tax allocations are estimated at a lower value than they have been over the last several years. They're saying that replacement tax revenues are expected to decrease over a period of time. They're also saying that the reconciliation between tax year 2015 and 16 involved with the tax calculation split, which was completed, resulted in some additional monies being deposited that should not have been. We talked last year about the Comptroller's Office making some errors in their calculations. So I would say this is a combination of the Comptroller's errors in calculations giving school districts slightly more than they should have, in addition to that body taking away funds and giving a reduction. So those two combinations put together is what is causing a 23% decrease for each of the school districts. I guess not just school districts, it's all taxing bodies, because villages, townships, mosquito abatement districts, all those taxing bodies are receiving the same type of decrease. So that is something that is new that I needed to share with you. State sources at this point, I'm still using the similar assumptions that we did in June, even though the Illinois budget did pass, the education budget still has not passed. Before I came here today, I did read, about some positive news where the four legislative leaders meeting in Chicago felt like they were an agreement. But as far as the details of what that agreement and financially what that looks for the for our district, we'll see soon. If all goes well, when we're presenting the budget, or when I'm presenting the budget in September, we'll have a firmer ideas of what those state numbers will be, and then those adjustments will be made on the state side of the form.
I was downtown and I heard somebody talking about it. That my understanding is that the grand plan is they're going to direct more funds to the city of Chicago schools and some of the poor downstate schools as opposed to the schools, districts that I guess they think are better funded. So.
Okay. So that sounds like that moves in line with Senate Bill 1, where the intention was to try to bring, try to level a playing field, try to provide more funding, but the parameters under Senate Bill 1 would only yield District 57 an additional $9,000. So we would not be one of those districts that would greatly benefit from a change in funding formula. Yeah, more money is more money, and a $9,000 increase is better than no increase or a decrease. So we'll stay tuned to what happens there. On the expenditure side, it's largely driven by salary and benefits. And it's based on the staffing plan that was discussed and approved earlier this year. Salary and benefits make up approximately 75% of the overall budget. There's still just a handful of vacancies at this time. And as I mentioned earlier, when we come back in September, there will be some budgeted numbers. We have numbers in here for positions that are placeholders. But when we get people in those positions where we have actual salaries and then actual benefits, we'll get a greater picture of what that looks like at that time. So that is a snapshot of the tentative budget. And if you have any questions at this time, I'd be more than happy to address those.
Jerry.
I just had one related to the TIF properties. Mm-hmm. So the properties that got pulled into the new TIF, were those, I guess before they're frozen, were they actually revalued on the newest, on the triennial reassessment, or are they thrown in at the old value? I'm just curious.
The benefit that we received in new property value was at the time of the old TIF expiring. So anything that's happening to the values of the properties that are within that TIF now will become part of the increment that will increase, and then over that 23-year period, we won't see any return from that during this time period. Honestly, I do not know. I do not know when, the TIF was established in the late, November, December. Yeah. So I don't know how that, as far as where the TIF's starting point is with the triennial, I'm not really sure what that basis was. I'm just confident that whatever that basis is, it will not impact us in either way for a number of years. And as time goes on, and as that increment grows, we'll have a better idea of seeing, what those values are. We'll have an annual TIF meeting. They'll give an annual report of what the increment is. They'll talk about the projects that have been started and the projects that have been allocated under those funds. And so, later this fall, I should have a better idea after I attend that meeting of what are the actual values of that TIF at that time. And I'll definitely be able to come back to the board and either through a memo or through just a quick verbal report, be able to report what the value is at that time.
I'm pretty certain that they adopted the TIF before the property was reassessed. That was their intention. I think that's the reason it was done in December, if I'm not mistaken, was they wanted to freeze it at the lower value so that after the reassessment they could capture keep that added value in the TIF district.
Yeah, bonus on their part. Yeah. That was my recollection, but unfortunate for us.
Any other questions? Dennis.
No. Adam, I'm trying to follow through on the local revenue from property tax, and I had it and I lost it. Was it 20 million?
The total local as far as property taxes?
Yes.
The total property tax is budgeted at $19,533,277.
Last year, we got a little more than that, didn't we? I mean, I'm sure you probably don't have that. I thought we got about 20.
As far as the amount of money that came in or the amount of money that was budgeted?
That actually came in.
Yes, more money did come in that was budgeted, and some of that had to do with the triennial, and some of that had to do with the lack of tax objections. When you have tax objections, the process could take a handful of years. So we try to estimate that as best as we can. And also, the 98.3% collection rate is the collection rate that we've used for a number of years. But as Cook County has been better about getting their tax bills out consistently and getting them out in March and March and August. We're having more individuals paying on time, and the district is able to realize that. Even sometimes they're paying a little earlier, so we're able to realize that also.
So our revenue is fairly consistent. It's not, we're not receiving more revenue from local sources. In fact, based on the budget as to the actual for last year, it's probably a little less.
I'd say it's pretty close. Remember the last two prior levy years were based on a CPI of 0.8 and 0.7. So if you're levying on less than 1% of overall number, you're not coming up with a large property tax increase. The two wild card factors this year was, one, the TIF expiring and having those values come off the books, and then the triennial assessment, which was much higher this year than it was for the past several years. Triennial, we're looking at 3 years, and so now we were finally to the point where we're looking at three consecutive years of being out of the recession. So many home values that were decreasing for a handful of years have now coming up and began rising back to the values, not the 2006 values, but much higher in the values than they have been for the last 6-7 years overall.
Just to follow on, Dennis, actually just looking at the calculations that you did, just so we're all clear, the TIF, kind of, I guess the TIF subsidy that the village was providing net of the increase in the $400,000 on a base of about $18 million, so it's almost a near break even on the property tax revenues to your point. So when you think about overall property tax, our base, we're not really getting anything more with that increase in EAV.
Well, and we were having some of those conversations when we were discussing the TIF and discussing the TIF revenue, and while the one time, being able to recapture the funds coming off of the TIF, they didn't necessarily, meet line in line with those one-time payments. But one of the village's major rationale for having that TIF end and restarting one was that the TIF was not generating enough increment with the properties that were in the TIF for them to be able to make those payments to all the entities, not only School District 57, but all the entities within the TIF. Just bringing us back to the conversations we had with the village several months ago.
This just came to mind. The tax that you receive is from the previous year, so it's always in arrears. Are we receiving the payment from the village for the tax, because they restructured the TIF, mm-hmm. but we had an agreement in place, and we had an agreement for 2016. They terminated the agreement, but are we still going to receive that payment for them, because it was for the 2016 taxes?
In FY17, we received the entire payment. We got that, I want to say, around January or February. So we did get the TIF, the old TIF expired, let's say November, December. In January, we did get that last TIF payment for FY17. But then this first budget, this FY18, this is the first budget we've had in a while where we're not getting that TIF payment.
Well, the TIF payment was received in 17 for 16, right?
Right.
They made a payment.
They made the payment. They made the payment. What was budgeted in FY17 was recorded in FY17, and there will be no one-time payment in FY18.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Yeah, Vicki.
So on Exhibit D, just to make sure I'm understanding this correctly, so if you look at the very last comment, column, percentage change FY17 expenditures to FY18 budget, so this is basically saying that looking at last year's budget to the FY18 budget, there's a just an increase of 3%.
Yes. So FD is broken down by object. And yes, it is, look, your the comparisons are made by the expenditures for FY17 to the FY18 budget.
So I guess then just my general comment is, you know, especially since, you know, given that we're thinking about a potential referendum next year, I think for this FY18 fiscal year, our best case scenario would be to, you know, to hold the line, right? To not increase the budget by millions, but really to like hold things steady. And so, mm-hmm. I think, you know, this right here kind of captures the fact that this is what we are indeed doing. So of course, you know, I understand something could change between now and a month from now, but I do think that as a district, you know, this is right here, you know, kind of like the best case scenario, especially considering the fact that, you know, you've been working on this since, I mean, December was when the student fees were first discussed mm-hmm. by the board, and then they were approved in January, staffing plan in February. So, you know, considering all the months and months that of planning and work that went into this, you know, I mean, I think this is exactly, you know, what people mm-hmm. would be hoping to see. And then it would be the FY19 budget where Dr. Allmiller would be forming that budget task budget reduction task force, right? So that would be the budget where we could start fresh and really take a look at cuts. But I think, you know, the wise thing to do for this year is exactly what you've done to kind of hold things steady.
Mm-hmm.
I would just add on to that saying that in recent years we found that when we get the audit, the increase is even less than what, because right now we're comparing it to last year's budget. When we get the audit, that's the actual numbers. You know, it's going to reflect the actual expenditures. So in recent years, we've kind of been, the board has kind of been leaning out administration to kind of tighten that up so there's not a big variance between the budget and what the actual numbers come in. And they've done a good job of doing that. So I think that, you know, that in general, you're right on, and that it's probably might even look better when we see the audit.
The just to reiterate that, the budgeting process on both the revenue and expenditure side is a challenge sometimes because, you know, you want to be able to budget for, you want to be able to have enough money for, you know, what you need, but then especially on the facilities and maintenance side, being able to prepare for, you know, the air conditioning unit goes down, major technology goes down, the speaker system in here a few months ago. So you want to be able to balance that and keep the line. On the revenue side, same challenge. We looked at this when we were looking at the what was given to us by the state of Illinois, just like we're challenged right now. I'm budgeting for general state aid payments of $975,000 because that is what the state is projected to give us. Now here it is, almost the end of August. We should have received two payments. We have received zero of those two so far, but that's not to be said that once the legislative leaders hopefully come to a compromise that those two payments will come in on time. They'll just come in a few days later than they would. So part of that is being able to take a look at the trend, especially in the last year or two, and being able to figure out exactly where that balance is, where that line is.
And in an effort to, and I know we have this information, we get it probably twice a year, I just can't find it. Is there a way that maybe for our next meeting or the 2nd, the next meeting, that we put together maybe a schedule of the local revenue over the last 5 years, just so we can see where it's progressed. Because I guess I just want to clear up any misconceptions that folks might have regarding what that amount is, you know, because
as far as property taxes,
yeah, the local revenue from property
taxes. Okay. And on a year-to-year basis?
Year-to-year basis.
Okay. Yes, that can be done. Yeah. Actually, I guess.
Support the question from earlier tonight that in terms of what the real changes for the.
Right.
Yeah, because you get a tax bill, and you do, you see real dollar numbers on your bill, mm-hmm. but you don't know the whole picture until you see where all the money is coming in. And that means if maybe somebody's paying more than somebody's paying less, mm-hmm. but we're getting the same amount.
So, correct.
And those are things we don't have control over.
Correct.
But I think it's a good picture for the public to be able to see, here's what we got 5 years ago, here's what we got 4 years ago, and you can see that the revenue is fairly consistent. I think at one point there it actually went down a little, mm-hmm. and then maybe went up a little, but we have not received much more, you know, we haven't received millions of dollars more revenue in any from year to year. And the amounts are percentages, you know, 2-3% is the most we've ever received, as far as I can remember from seeing the information.
Correct, and probably a really good time to do that would be right around the time the audit is being completed, because then I'll have actual numbers for the FY17 fiscal year in addition to 16, 15, 14, 13. I can very easily do a five-year spread of that and display it on a graphic so we can see the trend and actual data and actual data numbers there.
Thank you, Adam.
Sure.
Any other questions, thoughts? All right. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you.
We're going to move on now to the superintendent report. Elaine has a number of things.
Yes. Before those listed on the agenda, I do have two FOIA that I need to report per requirements of Open Meetings Act and Freedom of Information Act. I have two FOIA requests to report. First, we received a request last year on June 8, 2016 from Tom Mannion for several years of annual financial reports, our AFRs. At that time, we sent him electronic copies of the 2013 and 14 AFRs and a link for the 2015 AFR. On August 16th of this year, he emailed and said he had just gotten a chance to review the 2015 AFR and that it was removed from the District 57 website. He asked that we email him an electronic copy, and we did so on August 18th. Secondly, we received a request today on August 24th from Tom Mannion asking for the information packet distributed to the Citizen Task Force on August 21st, 2017 at Fairview School. We responded today by emailing him the presentation. On my additional staffing reports, first of all, the staffing plan update. In your packet was the summary sheet of FTE showing you the difference between the preliminary staffing plan that you approved back in February excuse me, and the plan as it exists today. That is a difference of an additional 3.2. I would point out that the 0.2 is a math teacher at Lincoln. We had originally thought and hoped that we could fill that additional 80-minute block of math time with our current staff. It would have required that one of our current staff get an overage pay. We did not have a staff member willing to do that, so we had to hire a 0.2 math person in order to fully staff for the additional math minutes. The additional 3.0 staff is really associated with, well, there's a 0.5 clerical assistant at Westbrook. I will point that out. They had a 0.5. Because of the nature of residency and the impact that it has on Westbrook School in particular, we felt that they needed some additional clerical assistant, and that's what that 0.5 represents. The rest of the FTE are due to instructional assistants, and I have asked Cassie if she would give you a summary of how we go about staffing for instructional assistants. It's important to note that when we do the staffing plan for you in February, the the instructional assistants, and since they are all associated with students with special needs, they're all special ed instructional assistants, aside from the large class size assistants, which we have two at grade three at Lyons Park this year, all the rest of them are due to special education. And we don't have the IEP meetings until April and May, so we're guessing on instructional assistants in February. We don't have firm numbers on that until the school year ends. So, Cassie, would you mind explaining a little bit further?
As Elaine mentioned, our instructional assistant allocations are based on student need, and there's a variety of steps that we take both in the spring and in the summer to help us really finalize those needs. And so I wanted to just kind of walk through what that might look like. There are a variety of factors that we look at. As Elaine mentioned, many of our students have their annual review meetings in the spring where we look at their IEP, their individualized education program, or they will have transition meetings if they're moving from one building to another. And during those meetings, oftentimes students' needs might change slightly. So perhaps a student has made some gains, they're growing in independence, and they no longer need as much instructional assistance support as they have in the past, and so we might reduce the minutes that are required on their IEP. On the flip side, sometimes students' needs may have changed and they might require a little bit more support, and so we'll increase that. Sometimes that's due to student needs, sometimes it's due to just changes that occur as students progress from grade to grade or building to building. For example, as students might move from primary to intermediate grades, they may be expected to work more independently. And so for some students, they may need some additional support through a classroom assistant to help with that, where maybe they haven't needed that support in the past. And our IEP meetings really occur up until the very last day of school. And so those numbers and the information is kind of changing throughout the year. Additionally, scheduling is another factor that we need to look at. Across our district, the majority of our students receive support through a classroom instructional assistant rather than a one-to-one assistant, and so we're very intentional about clustering students together with similar needs, but at the same time, we have to be aware of not to provide too many students with significant needs within the same classroom as well. And so, for instance, we might have eight students across third grade that require classroom instructional need, but that's really too many students to put in one class together, and so we would spread those students out across two classrooms, requiring two classroom instructional assistants. At the same time, sometimes student-specific needs might be another thing that has some scheduling constraints. So for instance, they might require a pull-out reading instruction, and that might only be offered during a certain time of day, so they need to be in a classroom that has a schedule that can accommodate that, and they might require instructional assistance support, and even if that was required in a different class, we wouldn't be able to put them in that class because then it would prevent them from accessing some of the other other services that they need. And I think at Westbrook, there's also just some difficulties with the half-day schedule and full-day schedule that also present some scheduling challenges as well. Additionally, we have students that move in throughout the year or who present with needs throughout the year that require us to add additional instructional assistance. And so we've had to increase instructional assistance support throughout the year, and we don't necessarily include that in that preliminary staffing plan because, based on the needs of all of our students across the district, based on, scheduling and all those other things, we might not necessarily need those that same number of instructional assistants at the year. So we use as the preliminary staffing plan the numbers that we start with at the very beginning of the year, and then once we have all of these factors figured out, then we're able to make those final determinations over the summer. So for these reasons, we kept the staffing plan back in February with what we started at the beginning of the year. And then when we had the chance to look at all of these factors across all of our buildings, we adjusted the instructional staffing needs, and then that's what's reflected on the current plan. For instance, we did have some students that either moved in last year or over the summer with needs, and then, or that were identified throughout the year, and that required us to increase instructional assistance support at Westbrook and at Lyons Park. Also, with the SOAR program moving from Fairview to Lyons Park, we did move some instructional assistance across the buildings as well. But the number of students in the SOAR, in the elementary SOAR program decreased as well, because four of those students are now at the middle school, and so that required one less instructional assistant here at Fairview that we didn't need to also move over to the SOAR program at Lyons Park. And so in looking at the needs of all of our buildings, then that ultimately led to a 2.5 FTE increase in instructional assistance. So that's just kind of an overview of the different factors, but I think, you know, it's one of those things that it does constantly change, and February, it's difficult for us to come up with really clear numbers, and so it's something that usually not until right up until the beginning of school can we really come up with those final numbers.
Thank you. Do any other questions
just
about the study?
For the 0.2, what grade was that in?
That's going to be, I believe, sixth grade.
Okay. And then for the, I know you're going to do the enrollment projections for next time. Are you going to have, though, the breakdown, at least maybe for next year's second grade, what it looks like?
Yes, I will have that at that time. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Hourly rate for instructional assistance? $13.50? Yeah, that sounds about right.
Salary, yes.
They work $30 to $30.
Okay. So it's on the additional three is under like $50,000.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
This is really just a basic question. What kind of hours does 0.2 math teacher?
They'll be teaching one math section a day, 5 days a week. So one period.
1.5 hour, 1 hour and 20 minutes.
It'll be one 80-minute period of math. But when we hired that individual, we paired it up with an instructional assistant position. So. It helped fill the vacancy there that we had as well.
Is that person a retired teacher? Or
No, that person actually was an instructional assistant in another district, but has the middle school endorsement for instruction of math, highly qualified to teach sixth grade math.
Okay. I have a question about the additional 0.5 clerical assistant at Westbrook. I know you said this was about dealing with residency issues and stuff, and I'm wondering how we did this in the past without this position and without a assistant principal at Westbrook.
Well, the assistant principal doesn't really have anything to do with residency. Residency has been handled through my office. Virginia has been dealing with it for the entire district, and it's become such a cumbersome, burdensome task, I've had to pull something off from her plate.
So is this person going to be working in the administration building?
No, they'll be working over at Westbrook. We're going to send residency back to the buildings. It's not going to come through my office.
So there's someone that deals with this at each building?
Yeah.
But Virginia had been doing it at Westbrook only?
No, she'd been doing it for the entire district.
So who's taking over this responsibility at the other building?
Their office staff, their current office staff.
And they don't have adequate office staff at Westbrook to do it without adding?
No, because the amount of residency that occurs at Westbrook is significantly more than the other buildings. It's just by the nature, one, of early childhood, because that's a revolving door all year long. Mm-hmm. And that's the first place of entering into the district, so that's a huge piece of paperwork.
And why wasn't that on the preliminary staffing plan?
Just
just hadn't crossed our minds to do it at that point in time, to be perfectly honest.
My concern is that, you know, we have a task force that's looking at our budget projections, and the staffing plan is, I mean, from a dollar standpoint, it's not a big difference, I suppose. I went back and looked at 5-year history, because when I came on the board right after they cut like 24 teachers, and ever since I've been on the board, I don't know, I guess when we cut all those teachers 6 years ago, when we were looking at the same kind of budget projections that we're looking at now, and the board, it was right in the wake of a recession, so the board, I think rightly, decided that, you know, we can't ask the taxpayers for an increase at this time, we're gonna have to cut. And so they cut 24 teachers, and I'm sure countless additional staff as well. But somehow the word didn't get out, because people kept moving in to this district with their children. I mean, in the last 5 years, the enrollment has increased by 11%. So as the enrollment was increasing and we were still trying to kind of keep some kind of limit on class sizes, even though our class sizes are still large compared to neighboring districts, for the most part, I don't think the board ever really questioned additional staff when administration requested it. And so the enrollment increase, when I went back over the last 5 years, I see the enrollment increase over the last 5 years is about 11%. The increase in number of certified staff is about 14%. And I would certainly not presume to say that there should be some kind of linear relationship between those two things. I think it depends on the number of sections you have, et cetera. But our non-certified staff, the ESP staff, has increased almost 18%. So I'm just trying to understand some kind of justification, you know, for this. And actually, while I'm at it, I wanted to ask you, and I know I emailed you earlier today, it was 5 years ago that we added Tom O'Rourke's position in administration that was having to do with human resources.
Right.
Can you tell me if any other positions have been added in, or what other positions have been added over at administration in the last 5 years?
In the last 5 years, 3 years ago, we added a 0.38 clerical assistant in HR.
So that's it?
That's it.
A third of a,
yeah,
to assist Tom.
Yeah.
Okay. I knew it wasn't much. I don't know. Can you tell me anything to make me more comfortable with the fact that the ESP staffing has increased by almost 18% in the last 5 years?
Without having a chance to take a look at it line by line, off the top of my head, I would say it really, the main fluctuation we have in ESP staff is instructional assistance, and that's based on special education.
Do we have more children coming to us with special needs? Has that percentage of our population increased? You know, language learners, I know we have a heck of a lot of foreign languages in this district. Has that always been the case, or has that been something that's
has increased, and we have added instructional assistance for that program.
I seem to notice that that's been one area that it's increased, and that just popped into my mind right now, because that was something I became aware of last year. But I guess if we're going to approve this budget, and as board members we're going to go out to the public, we have to be able to speak to these types of things. Why these increases in staffing, why are they necessary, and what's the justification? So I would ask maybe that at the next meeting, as we move to adopt the budget, that maybe you give us more information about that. about why, you know, why this, I mean, I think we learned a lot tonight, but particularly the increases in the non-certified staff, you know, why we're seeing that seem to increase at a rate that's more than just the rate of enrollment increase, you know.
We'll take a look at it.
Okay. Thank you for indulging me in my, that was keeping me awake the last couple of nights.
I just had one question. When we talk about instructional assistants, do we have, I know the last few years, the Westbrook, specifically around Westbrook, the focus has been to kind of push any additional assistance that children need, whether it's math or reading, because that's like a key time of their life that we found that if you kind of, you know, if you push that on the front end while they're still young, there's less of that gap closure that they have to do when they, once they hit, you know, second, third, fourth grade, et cetera. Maybe it would be helpful also just to know where, you know, what buildings and if there's a tie-in. And the only reason why I say that is I know, like, when my daughter was at Westbrook, you know, there were multiple instructional assistants that assisted her with reading, but it was, what is it, the sight word assistance, then she was in another reading thing, then she was in a third, I mean, there were multiple, and it was trying to catch, you know, close the gap, so when she got to second grade, it wouldn't be so impactful. And I remember the teachers and Dr. Gore talking about that, so that could be a part of it as well.
There are more instructional assistants at Westbrook.
At Westbrook, right. But there is a correlation, or at least I think studies that prove that if you attack it early on, then you won't have to be fighting it,
absolutely.
You know. So I think that's also something just to consider as well. So just adding my 2 cents. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments on staffing? All right.
Okay. My next report is on, I said I would give you an enrollment update. The official annual enrollment study will be presented at the September meeting, but I can tell you that as of today, our enrollment is 2,222 students. Now that's kindergarten through eighth grade. There are another 71 in early childhood. Our projection last year was to have 2,265, so we're about 40 students under our projection. It gives me about a 98% accuracy rate. I think that's pretty good for projection. The things that stand out in enrollment this year is our second grade. Last year, when you look at first grade, you have to, as Eileen, you were asking about, you have to break them into their attendance districts, whether they're going to Lyons Park or going to Fairview. And the data we had last year said that our second graders this year, last year's first graders, current second graders, would break down into 57% of them coming to Fairview and 43% of them going to Lyons Park. That did not play out. Actual number is it's 49% at Lyons Park and 51% at Fairview. So we have shifted back in the 9 years I have been here. I'm seeing the shift back to being more evenly distributed to the buildings. So, and I think that's a good thing. So that's one thing that stands out. And Lincoln, the enrollment projection last year said we'd be at 797, almost 800 students. We're actually at 783. Our sixth and eighth grade numbers came in under projections. So there's a quick eyeball shot at enrollment.
Thank you.
Can I ask one quick question?
Sure.
So that shift kind of back to like equal numbers, mm-hmm. at Fairview and Lyons Park, is that just in the second grade or is that kind of across?
All I can say right now is that's reflective in second grade. I'll know more when I get the data for the current first graders. Mm-hmm. The last staff report was regarding the Lincoln security update. There was a memo in your packet regarding, you had asked for us to take a look at security regarding Lincoln and specifically, and Adam provided that document for you. I will turn it over to Adam. Any questions that you have, I will direct them towards him.
The the memo from the police department is in your packet, and I know someone asked a question earlier in the week, just to be upfront that there are no costs associated with this yet, because, for example, the additional sensors, motion sensors and lighting, that would be dependent on how many motion sensors and how much lighting would be put in. The exterior doors that need to be replaced, those are the same doors that were originally brought to the board last spring. Most of those were cut out for budgetary reasons outside of door 19, which is being repaired. And then the idea of the caps to prevent students or former students from coming on the roof, this is the first time we have explored this idea, so I don't at this point have any cost estimates on that either. However, as we begin the planning process for the upcoming year and the upcoming summer, these are all pieces that will be rolled into the master facilities plan, where we will begin discussing and addressing some of these issues.
Yes, Brian.
Is there a plan to do assessment of all the schools?
The idea was to begin with Lincoln, and then after that move on to the other buildings. Lincoln seemed a majority of our issues with the, for lack of a better term, teenagers appear at Lincoln, especially with the roof. Too much? On that note, and I know we made a social media blast through our PR consultant, Jenny Quinn, and we'll do that again, is just reminding all the community members, if you see students up on the roof or if you see students or teenagers around those schools, to please call the police when that happens. I know there was some incidents earlier in the year where parents were conversing on Facebook of things that they saw. And if you call the police, especially after hours, the police can go there and address that. And most recently in the summer, students were arrested because somebody did see the students on the roof and did call the police. And it's a very dangerous situation. And if the police go out there and address it right away, we could prevent any further harm to anyone. So I please encourage you and encourage your neighbors and your people on your blocks to do that. Don't hesitate to call. That's what they're there for.
So I know these are, very recent recommendations. Mm-hmm. But I just wonder, in light of all the other construction projects that we have on hold for the future, and I know there's some overlap here, mm-hmm. with the exterior doors, but do you have a general sense of how these would fit in terms of, safety or the timeliness, or are the doors now suddenly bumped up to the front because of this, or what?
Going back to some of our discussions in May when we decided to add the two doors, one at Lincoln and one at Lyons Park, the doors made it to the onto the list because they are deteriorating and they need to be replaced.
And those were actually breached, right?
Those two doors were breached, and that's why the board chose to replace those two. But the other ones that were not replaced are just going to continue to deteriorate as time goes on.
And so the one that's currently chained, door 19, is that not one of the...
That will be replaced. It's on back order. Yes, it's on back order, and it's coming any day now. Same thing with the door at Lyons Park.
Yes,
I'm assuming it's not chained during school.
No, only in the evening. Be a fire hazard.
What would it cost to keep a couple dogs on the roof at Lincoln?
I have not explored that option.
Parking motion.
Yeah, they pick up motion.
Go ahead. Sorry, Jen, go ahead.
No, that's okay. Is there any... We appreciate the Mount Prospect Police mm-hmm. Department doing that assessment. I think we requested it, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Is there anything in here that puts us at risk now that there's a document, it's documented what needs to be done? And so if something occurs, for instance, someone goes on the roof and they, fall or they do anything, is there any risk? Have we had our, you know, I realize we're saying that we're going to, because of our, you know, budget reasons, and none of these seem so alarming from a safety perspective, but if we're going to wait within the year, is there anything that puts us at risk?
But the police department are making recommendations to us.
Okay.
So these are their recommendations. Yes.
Okay.
Did they suggest putting up signs, you know, warning danger signs or warning signs?
Please don't climb the roof. They did not mention anything like that, but they did agree with me on the public media campaign of making everybody aware and getting that word out. You would not believe how many times, and again, this happened last year, but you won't believe how many times people are up on the roof and the parents don't do anything about it. And that's not good for anybody. I would, yeah, what I would add that into the process, and when we start planning with the architects, this would definitely be going in there. All these things will go in there.
And can you just kind of keep us updated? Like you said, you wouldn't believe how many times people go on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
I'd kind of like to know how often it happens, you know. Is it every weekend? Is it?
The times I'm made aware is when either the silent alarm is tripped or someone calls the police and the police let us know. So those are the times that I know. Unfortunately, if the police are not called or if neighbors are just conversing on Facebook about the incident, I'm not aware of those. I'm not in.
I understand. But what I'm saying is, if you're aware of.
Yes,
that,
I will. I will definitely do that.
Get a better grasp on how, you know, how
I will definitely do that.
Any other questions about that? Okay. All right, we can move on then. We have a number of items on the consent agenda. Minutes of the July meeting, open and closed sessions. We have personnel transactions, financial reports, and accounts payable. Vicki, did you review the bills?
Yeah, everything was in order.
Okay, great. I'm going to pull number one because I was absent from the July 20th meeting. Would anyone like to pull any other items from the consent agenda? Okay. Then we'll start with... agenda number one. Can I get a motion, please?
Motion to approve consent agenda item 1 minutes of the Board of Education meeting on July 20th, 2017, open and closed session.
Second.
Member Chung?
Yes.
Member Compasto?
Yes.
Vice President Kobus?
Yes.
Member Qualtra?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes. Yes.
President Furman-Hawk.
Abstain. And then would someone make a motion on the remaining items?
Motion approve consent agendas 2, 3, and 4, personnel transactions, financial reports, accounts payable.
Second.
Member Compasto?
Yes.
Vice President Kobus?
Yes.
Member Qualtra?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes. Yes.
Member Chung?
Yes.
President Sondheim?
Yes. And as far as unfinished business, we have none. We do have another opportunity for community comments. Is there anybody with us who has some thoughts to share?
Yes. Lewis Goodman, District 57 resident. We've heard quite a bit tonight about the budget and the problems and so forth. I think, though, what is troubling with so many people in my area and is that On the thinking on the side of administration, it's a little heavy. And also, it's been in the papers for almost year after year for the last few years that teachers near retirement, the districts give them a hefty pay raise so that they can draw more money on their retirement. I think a lot of people are concerned about that, and they, because of some of the teachers that are getting $180,000, $200,000 a year on retirement, they say that's a little bit ridiculous. Now, having said that, maybe 25, 30 years from now, when everybody like so many of you guys are making over $100,000 a year, and we all of the senior citizens that are only making $28,000 or $30,000 a year, maybe when they're dead and all the ones that are the kids that are getting out of college and they make over $100,000 a year, maybe there'll be no complaints and maybe the taxes will be a different so that the park district, the villages, and the school districts can get the amount of tax dollars that they want. But I think until then, you're going to have a lot of squabbling between the young and the old, if nothing else. And I think that's a big problem, not just in Mount Prospect, but all across. And I know I've talked to an awful lot of people in the last few years, and that is one of the concerns that they have, especially the older people that are living on a fixed income. And they see this in the paper or someone tells them about it, that the teachers and the principals and the superintendents are getting $180,000, $200,000 a year retirement fund, and they can buy their house in Arkansas or maybe state of Nevada or Arizona or Florida, wherever, even in Wisconsin, and have a second or third home. And this bothers a lot of people, especially in the older age people. And as I said, maybe when everybody's making over $100,000 a year, maybe things will be a little more expensive then, but maybe then that the school districts and so forth can get the tax dollars that they're striving for. And I wish that the park district, the village, and the school districts look at their administration people and see how many people they really need to have an everyday school year or working, taking care of the citizens and whatever. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't give our kids a decent education. That's not what I'm saying. I think sometimes that we're passing some of these students when they don't need to be passed. They shouldn't be passed. I think sometimes maybe our administrations should use a little more common sense about some of these things as well. And so that, having all said all that, I thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Goodman. And we'll move on then. Our item under new business is approval of the 2017-2018 tentative budget. Can I get a motion?
Motion to approve new business, item one, approval of the 2017-2018 tentative budget.
Second.
Vice President Kobus?
Yes.
Member Kowalczyk?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Chung?
Yes.
Member Composto?
Yes.
Yes. We don't have any items for board discussion this month. At some point, we'll want to talk about community engagement, although in light of the many things we have going on this fall with task force and then a budget reduction committee, I don't know if we'll want to do a community engagement thing this fall, but
I don't think we should rule it out. If everyone wants to just kind of give it some thought, let's discuss it at the next meeting. Yeah, Jen.
I just had one question about the task force. I'm assuming there's a specific agenda that's been, dates and stuff like that. Does the board need to do anything at this point? Is there any recommendation? Should we be, participating even from just an observation standpoint? Should we not be involved? What are kind of the requirements from the consultant that we're working with?
And the consultant would tell you that the board really shouldn't be there.
Okay. Good enough. That's it. I just want to make sure if you need us or not.
Because the recommendation is going to come to you formally,
okay,
that your presence in the room when the discussion goes on could be somewhat of a hindrance.
Okay.
But you're certainly welcome to be there, but that's what the consultant would tell you.
Okay, I don't want to deter anything. And so when, do we have a date when there will be a response back to the board or a suggestion, or do we have a timeline?
It looks like it would be, the earliest it would be November.
Okay.
November or December, the recommendation will come forward.
And is that too soon in order to make the requirements for March?
No, you could still make the March election.
Mm-hmm. Okay, just double checking. Those were my only questions.
Has the committee been picked and everybody?
Yeah, they had their first meeting, right?
Yeah, they met last week.
Not last week.
Good
first
group.
One.
Did we get a copy of what we presented to them?
Sure, we can send you the PowerPoint.
So can I just say, that makes sense that Mr. Hanley would prefer the board, it's probably better for the discussion, but as a parent and a taxpayer, I just apologize in advance. Maybe I'll just sit in back and hide in the corner, but I really want to be here to hear what's going
nothing,
on.
Nothing
and
stops you from being there.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
But I do understand. But yeah.
It's an interesting conversation. And I think as a new board member, I can see where I think I'm an intimidating person, but maybe some people would feel, but I think people spoke freely the other night, even though I was in the room, right? So maybe we don't want to show up as a board, but if somebody is really curious and wants to go to a meeting, check in with Elaine and see. I think if there's one or two of us there, it would probably be okay.
And that's an important factor. I was concerned about the number of board members that were there Monday night because you're tripping over on Open Meetings Act. Because you were all there and you were talking about what was going on, and this was not a posted meeting.
Who was there besides Vicki and I?
There was four.
Brian,
we had four.
And Eileen.
We had a quorum.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. brings up another question. Do we have to recertify under the Open Meetings Act, or is it once you've certified, you don't have to? Is it every 4 years?
Oh, for Open Meetings
right.
Act? No, once you've done it, you're good to go.
Are there any other certification requirements that we have to update every 4 years? Or is the Open Meetings Act the only?
Virginia, help me out here.
I feel like you have to do it every time you're elected, right?
I believe it's only when you come on the board.
The very first time, even when you get reelected, you don't have to do it again?
I don't think so. We can double check that.
Now, here's,
I got a note from after.
I did too.
I just got a note from the election.
But
my recollection was that we didn't have to redo open meetings. We had to do that once. I think I looked it up at one point too. But it's probably worth checking just so we don't find out we're not in compliance.
You know what?
Better to know.
The checklist from the spring, who had to do it.
And it was just the new
board
that elected.
So just to revisit the task force, now I know the first meeting, Paul Hanley asked me to come to thank the task force members. Is that something that he wants me or another board member to do at each meeting?
Yes.
Okay. Would it be best if it's me, or could it be anyone who wanted to attend?
I intend to attend all the meetings.
All right. All right. Then I think it's important if you're going to attend that we not have conversations.
I think maybe the best, just in case you don't want somebody to catch you in a trap, is that everybody who wants to go let you and Elaine know, mm-hmm. and that you limit it to two. Because we don't want three in the audience at any time. Because you may have something to play.
But we got to watch out for the open meeting.
Yeah, I believe, I mean, there's some weird cases out there about board members and council members.
Well, what about?
Sat down at
those meetings are posted anyway, right? The task force meeting? And then we'd be in compliance.
Right, we didn't, we posted it only in terms of we publicized it.
Yeah.
We didn't post it as a meeting of the Board of Education. If we post it as a meeting of the Board of Education, we'll need to take a roll, we'll need to take minutes.
Yeah.
You got to go through all the formalities
right.
of a board meeting.
So then the only thing is that...
I just don't want somebody who's... has an issue with the meeting to bringing the issue up, and then
that's my concern as well.
Right.
I think it's better to
just limit
to let Joe make a decision about two of the members.
All right. So,
that's my opinion. There may be a difference of opinion, but
I think we can talk about it. I think there are ways to resolve the issue. So I don't think any decision needs to be.
When's the next task force meeting?
September 13th.
All right. So. Don't tell me now, but if there's someone who feels that they really feel strongly that they would like to attend, email Elaine and myself, and then we'll decide how we're going to deal with that. Okay?
Can I ask one? Is it possible to record? I mean, I don't know if we have enough microphones, but to record the meetings? Because I would be fine.
We don't have the people because of the size of the group.
All right. Any other concerns, questions? All right. Do we have closed session?
We do not.
Oh. Okay, there's no need for closed session this evening. So I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn?
Second.
All in favor? Can we do it that way? Or do we have to? Go ahead.
Member Kowalczyk?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Chung?
Yes.
Member Contasto?
Yes.
Vice President Hovis?
Yes.
President Snellenfeld?
Yes. Thank you, everyone.